Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Murder 123. This is Dr. John Shamey. I'm broadcasting live from Greenville, South Carolina, and we are going to have a heck of a show tonight. It's cold down here. I bet it's cold everywhere else except in Hollywood. And speaking of Hollywood, how are you doing, Devin Tate?
I'm doing great, and it is actually a pretty nice day here, but it's cooled off a little bit now tonight.
Well, I'm glad you are with us tonight. You've been on secret special assignment with some music. So you have to tell us just a minute what you've been doing, because it's very interesting. We did a big special about you on ScaryCast a couple months ago when you released your CD and your album and your single with starring Wendy Ho, and it was great. So what you've been working on?
Well, I've just mainly been playing live lately, so I've been concentrating on that. I've been playing, there's a thing called Social Jam up on the Sunset Strip every Monday night that I've been doing a lot of. And then there's a winery out in Thousand Oaks that I've also been playing at a lot. So just kind of doing a lot of live shows lately.
The winery, that's where I want to go, okay?
Yeah, we'd love to have you there.
Well, I will be out there sooner than later. That is my plan. So that sounds great. We're always glad to have you here and everything. And our board operator tonight, making his maiden voyage in the control room, is Tony Pelosi from Harland, Kentucky. How are you doing tonight, Tony?
I'm doing fine, John. How are you doing, Devin?
Really good. Thank you.
It's been something else. Now, is this everybody so far?
It's everybody so far. We're still waiting on Robin, but
she'll be here. Yeah. So anyway, what I wanted to do is I want to get started here. I think this is one of the most engaging stories I have ever come across. And I'll say this right now: if anybody thinks this story is false, then if you'll pay $750, I'll take the lie detector test, and I'll pay you back because I'm lying. So anyway, this story began about 7 or 8 years ago when I was living in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. And I was doing some work at that time with the Ryan Research Institute in Durham. You know, that's where they study ESP and psychic phenomena. It was always a blast working up there with Dr. Sally Reinfelder, Dr. John Carpenter, Dr. John Palmer, the whole crowd. They were just wonderful. And what happened was I caught wind of a fellow named Andy Basiago. I was just searching the internet as I would, you know, for various projects and interesting things. And so what happened was I found his Project Pegasus. Now, have either of you, before you got the dossier tonight, have either of you ever heard of Project Pegasus?
I had not.
Vaguely, but it's been like on a coast-to-coast show. I noticed in the notes that he's been interviewed on coast-to-coast. So that's probably where I heard it. I used to listen to Coast all the time.
I know. So here's what Project Pegasus is, because it is fairly different. Andy, who is currently an attorney and a highly regarded attorney up in Vancouver, Washington, he said that when he was a kid, about 10 years old, the government had spoken to some parents and had gotten their permission to let their kids be involved in a scientific experiment. It turns out the scientific experiment was time travel. And there were about 8 to 10 kids, and they sent them back to a particular date because for some reason the feds who were running this project had a very interesting question that they were dying to know the answer to. And the question was this: who shot Lincoln? Now, let me take a poll. Who shot Lincoln? Tony? Who do we know from school and everything? Who shot Lincoln?
history would tell us John Wilkes Booth.
All right, Devin, out there on the West Coast, does history books tell you the same thing?
Yep, that's what I always heard.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think it's interesting that they wanted to send these kids back into time so that they could find out John Wilkes Booth. That ought to tell you that maybe there's something more to this than meets the eye. And then this is the story he's telling me. He's on his cell phone. He's driving with his girlfriend. They're in the mountains of Vancouver, Canada, right in and around Vancouver, Canada, there in British Columbia. But so he was talking to me. He said, well, they sent us back. And they sent back, we've got each one had to do about 10 or 12 trips back to 1865. And so they dressed them up appropriately, and they fired them right back. And it was their job to see who ran out of the Ford Pier. Now, here's the interesting part. I said, all right, Andy, you really got my interest up. Who shot Lincoln? He said, oh, 60% of the time, it was John Wilkes Booth. 25% of the time, it was Mary Todd Lincoln. 15% of the time, it was somebody else, and we didn't know. Now, gentlemen and listeners, that is the most stunning way to answer a question. Nobody comes up with that answer. I mean, they'd say, well, most of the time it was John Wilkes Booth. But they wouldn't give you statistics. That's like something a management science person would say to answer a question. And so I was stunned. That was the most amazing answer I had ever heard in my life. So I said, well, tell me more. He said, all right, well, just, you know, go back, read a little bit about the assassination on Wikipedia, and call me back. So, of course, you know, being a smart guy, I listened to an attorney. So I go on there, and what it says was, and I got this from several sources, it says the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, the murderous attack on him, the 16th president of the nation at Forge Theater in Washington, D.C., happened on the evening of April 14, 1865. He was shot in the head by Confederate sympathizer John Wilkes Booth. Lincoln died the following morning on April 15, 1865, where he had been taken to the Peterson House there in Washington, D.C. There wasn't anything much they could do for him. He was shot in the back of the head. So that's the first thing. Now, the second thing is, who was Mary Todd Lincoln? That's something that history books really, you know, they really kind of ignore this. She was from Kentucky, and her entire family were a group of Confederate sympathizers, although she didn't really care either way. Now, who was John Wilkes Booth? John Wilkes Booth was a member of one of America's most renowned acting families. His brother, Edwin Booth, was widely regarded as the country's leading actor. Now, here's the story. Here's how it goes. At Ford's Theater, John Wilkes Booth made his way to a private box on the second floor where Lincoln and his wife, Mary Todd, were watching a play with guests Claire Harris and Union officer Major Henry Rathbone. They had actually sent out a number of invitations, but nobody seemed to want to go with the Lincolns. I mean, you know, this is right after the Civil War. And I can tell you guys this, is that Lincoln was the hot topic. There were a lot of people that did not like Abraham Lincoln for obvious reasons. So what happened is John Wilkes Booth snuck up the stairs, and this is what Andy Bontiago says, that he got inside and he saw John Wilkes Booth sneak up the stairs. The door was unguarded. He opened the door right as the crowd went crazy with laughter or something, and he flat out shot Lincoln in the back of the head. He jumped over the railing, jumped down onto the stage. He screamed something. He hurt his leg, and then he made his way outside where there was a horse waiting. Now, that's one of the instances that I saw. He said, in one of my 11 trips back there, I saw Mary Todd Lincoln shoot him. Then I also saw somebody, I don't know who, shot him as well. So he reported mainly John Wilkes Booth. What was interesting, he said that when he went back one time, he actually saw a very faint version of himself running around. Like, they were in time scenes, different time scenes, and they could see each other. And he said that was the creepiest thing in the world. He saw himself. They even waved at each other. They knew what they were doing, and they continued on with what they were doing. So now, what I will tell you about Mary Todd Lincoln, she and Abraham had an extremely rocky and horrible marriage. There were a lot of problems. They had kid problems. They had marital problems. They had all kinds of problems. So there is a case that Mary Todd Lincoln could have, that she could have shot Abraham. The majority of the time it was John Wilkes Booth. Now here's the interesting thing. I'm going to throw this right at you. Are you ready, Tony and Devin?
I'm ready.
Are you ready? I'm going to throw this at everybody.
Okay, because then I got a theory after you.
Okay, great. So here's the deal. It is possible that John Wilkes Booth or Mary Todd Lincoln or someone else ran in and shot Abraham Lincoln. But there was so much confusion going on up there. The kids that went up there, nobody ever really saw Booth shoot anyone or Mary Todd Lincoln. They just assumed that's what happened because whoever shot, they ran out. So it might be the case that Abraham Lincoln could not have been shot and that the whole thing was a little bit of a cover-up to eliminate Lincoln from public life. Therefore, either it was a body double or someone just shot something up in the air. They ran out with Lincoln and somebody else replaced Lincoln. Because there's not a lot of records that show what happened at that period where they supposedly took Lincoln. Now, I've seen some stories, but I've never seen any actual. I did a look real quickly. I didn't see any actual records. But what I'm saying is that there is a lot of conspiracy going on there. Number one, you have a legitimate attorney, AV rating, the top rating in the country, and he is telling me that he was part of Project Pegasus, and he was sent back in time. Now, I don't know about you folks, but when somebody, and he had just been on, I don't think Basiago is a liar at all. I think this is all for reason. So now, I am going to vanish for just a moment, and I'm going to turn this whole discussion to my three worthy panelists, and I'll be right back.
That was a really interesting story.
It really is.
What
I
want to
throw on another.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, what about another theory? And I'm not saying this is it. I'm just throwing out another one. We know that the marriage was bad. Okay?
Yes.
And what if Mary, because she wanted out of the marriage, and obviously divorce wasn't something that was really recognized back then, but she also didn't want to give up her stature or her way of life. What if she got hold of Booth, and this was set up between the two of them? Because Mary would have been the one to get Lincoln into where he was at. She could have, let the guards go, say, we're fine, you need to leave, whatever. She was in an authoritative position where she could have done that, making it easier for Booth to get in there. Because there wasn't the security that he should have had or that he would have normally had, which means somebody had to change it. And if things were really as bad with her and her husband, then it's, you know, altogether possible that she could have gotten hooked up with John Wilkes Booth. This could have been set up between the two of them. She arranged for security to be much more lax than normal, and nobody would have thought the wiser because that was his wife. She wouldn't have to give up the prestige of being his wife or her way of living. She would just be the grieving widow.
It's possible because, you know, somebody had to tell, for John Wilkes Booth to walk in like he did, somebody had to send the guards home. Somebody made a horrible mistake, or was it a mistake?
I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was set up from before they ever got there. I don't buy that this was just something that happened, that he just barged in and Booth did this. It would also explain the conflicting reports from the time travelers. Not to mention the fact, if they were trying to get him out of there, if the powers that be would have got any insight that this was going to go down, they could have put a body double in there, therefore verifying John's idea as well. But I still think there was something, it was not just a single party that was involved. It was more than one person. Somebody had to get rid of those guards. Somebody had to keep the situation calm so that Lincoln and everybody else felt everything was okay. And the only one that could have been in that position to do it was his wife. And because she is a prominent figure, she's not going to get her hands dirty. And that's where she brings in Booth.
Interesting.
So what are your thoughts on that, guys?
Well, I could see that being true. I mean, there's definitely a lot of documentation about the trouble that they had in their marriage. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a lot of rumors that he was intimate with his male best friend, Joshua Speed, who he lived with and shared a bed with for many years. So that could be one big reason why she might want to take that route.
Well, absolutely. In addition, I mean, back then that wasn't talked about. That was taboo.
Yeah, totally. You know, and add that to the pressure of everything with slavery and Lincoln being president, you know, it could definitely be a way for her to get out of that situation. And like you said, still retain the dignity of being his widow.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and I'm not saying that they didn't use a body double, because I think on a lot of these cases that we've talked about in the various shows, and the more you talk about it, the more the probability of a lot of these people just get tired of the pressure and the constant public harassment. And they do. They set up their own death. It's their only way out. Because as long as they're living and breathing and walking around, the public is never going to leave them alone. So, I mean, that's certainly something. And if they felt that he was turning into more of a disgrace, or public opinion was to the point where it was going downhill, they could have very easily gotten a body double, got him out of there, and had the body double killed. But I still think that Booth and Mary had something going on there, because she would have wanted it done. He was making a mockery of her. And back then, you didn't want a divorce. You would rather be a grieving widow than a divorcee. And she didn't want to lose the prestige she had and the way of life she had. But she couldn't have been the one to be that. I mean, she was involved in it. She was probably her idea. But she can't be the one that pulled the trigger, because she's got to play the grieving widow. So that's where Booth would have came in.
Right. She would have removed all the obstacles in order for him to get into the
Absolutely.
Into the box.
That was not set up normally. I mean, somebody had to do it. And, I mean, I don't know back then, but I know anytime there's a president around, downing down security is never an option.
No, especially during wartime. You know, I know the Civil War just ended, but, you know, they would have had extra security. I mean, anybody in the right mind would have had the place would have been crawling with soldiers.
Exactly. And what better person to dismiss the guards than his wife. Because Lincoln wouldn't have thought anything about it because that's his wife, and whether they get along or not, she's supposed to act her role as the first lady and take care of everything. He would, you know, he wouldn't have thought anything about it. It would have looked worse if it was one of his, you know, his men that were doing it. He's going to want to know why. But if he's sitting there at the booth and his wife is like, you need to leave. You guys were fine. We just want to be left alone to do this or this. I can see that much easier than having somebody else in charge dismiss it, because that would have brought suspicion up.
Right. Well, what about this? What has me really interested is whenever that they go back in time, allegedly, and they talk about that 60% of the time John Wilkes Booth shot him, 25% of the time Mary Todd shot him, and 15% of the time it was someone else. I know that from what little I know about time travel, that they get into to parallel dimensions. And the facts and happening in one dimension may not be the reality in another dimension. So if they are actually doing time travel, I have a couple questions. One, why did they send children? And two, you know, another explanation could be that they are seeing alternative endings, so to speak. Because they're different, you know, they're not actually where they think they are. This is, you know,
right.
Alternate, like a movie, like an alternate ending, you know, when they're in one dimension, it's John Wilkes Booth. When they're in another dimension, it's Mary Todd. It's, you know, a different reality.
Yeah.
excuse me, in another dimension, it's some random Southern sympathizer.
Well, and I have to agree with you on all of that, like 1,000,000%. But the one thing I thought, and again, I agree with you on it totally, when I read that they sent children back, why? Why would you – there's something wrong with that to begin with. I mean, right out the door, there's something wrong with it. Why would you send a child to see about a murder?
Yeah, unless
that
the
makes
molecular –
no sense to anybody.
No, none whatsoever, unless there's something about the molecular makeup that made them easier to transport, you know, at that age. But I mean,
if that was the case, there would have been documentation as to why they used children. There was
no
explanation, which means to me that's
something.
Really shady. And there are, you know, there's parallel planes to all dimensions. You don't know which plane these kids went on.
Yes, exactly.
You
that,
know,
and,
I mean, that
and
could,
that would.
And you know, children are not very careful, and when you're time traveling, you can disrupt so many things just by the simplest little interaction or action that you have.
You could have changed the timeline.
So, yeah, doing them back that many times to the point where they're seeing themselves just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
I agree with you. And, you know, John and I were having a conversation the other day about premonitions, and because I do get premonitions. And we were talking about the fact that, you know, I can give you a premonition right at this very point in time. But if anything in that vision were to change between now and then, it would change it. It's not that set in stone. The vision is what it is at that particular day, time, and minute. You know, and it could be something as simple as, you know, the person you're having a premonition about was supposed to go to Walmart and then decided that day they were tired and they didn't. That changes the chain of events, which can change it. So if they're sending kids, an adult would be more conscious if things were amiss, if things weren't how they were told it was going to be. If they had a group of adults that they were going to go and have this done to, adults are going to want to know everything. They're going to want to know every single solitary detail, time, date, what's going to happen, how it's going to happen, whatever. Kids don't, because kids don't know to. And I think that could be why they use these children, because they were going to ask questions.
How do they prep the children, though?
I don't know. I mean, to me, that's just is mind-boggling because normally you don't prep a child to watch a murder scene. It's too terrifying for them, and they can't comprehend it because they aren't, you know, that's completely out of the realm of possibilities for them, and it's terrifying. Where an adult could handle that, but if they weren't intentionally planning, if they were planning from the get-go of sending them to multiple different planes, that would explain why they used the kids, because the adults weren't going to go for it.
And then the senator,
maybe they thought the kids would be less conspicuous than adults from a different time.
Well, but I'm sure they dressed them in the period attire, but,
I'm sure.
You know, three or four kids wandering around a Ford's Theater probably would draw some sort of attention in that time frame, because how did they get close enough to see the shot fired? How were they viewing this? Were they, you know, where did they send them to where they had that viewpoint, you know?
Well, and also I think too, and this is kind of out there. I mean, it's kind of a far-fetched thought, but you know, when these kids all came back, if it were an adult is going to come back and say, I saw X, Y, and Z, and that's the way it is. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. A child comes back and says, well, I saw this, this, and this, and they're easily manipulated to believe they saw what you wanted them to see. You know, so that's another thing to think about.
Well, and another thing is the kids might be more likely to just want to be an observer and see what happens, whereas an adult might have some, you know, emotion attached to it where they might want to change
that's
it.
True.
You know, they might consciously want to prevent him from being
murdered.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, the whole thing with the parallel planes, if people really think about it, there's times in your life where, you know, you experience this deja vu like you've done it before.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, not just, oh, this looks familiar, but you feel it down to your core. You've done that before. And that would be explained with the parallel universe, with the parallel dimension. Because you already have done it before.
Well, how did they select the child? I have a lot of questions, you know. How did they select the children? How did they keep the children from talking once they got back? I mean, a 10 or 12-year-old kid, you know, when they get back and they see something like that, you know, they're going to be, A, traumatized, or, B, they're going to want to tell all their friends, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think he's back yet. I have such a hard time understanding. I mean, I can come up with ideas as to why they would use these kids. But to me, and of course, I'm a mom. You know, I had 8 kids. And that's barbaric. To put a child in that mental mind state of having to witness a murder. Okay, you're traumatized enough, just even though you know you're going back in time. You know, that's probably an unsettling thing to do, not to mention the travel itself. And then to watch something like that, to come back and report it. I just think, you know, no matter how you slice it, that's barbaric to do that to a child. I mean, I don't know who came up with the idea, but they were nuts.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very questionable. But, you know, maybe it did have something to do with the size of their bodies being smaller, might have been easier. And to your point about children talking, if a kid comes up to you and tells you, hey, I went back, you know, back in time, I time traveled and saw, you know, Abraham Lincoln get murdered, most adults would be like, oh, you know, sure you did. You know, like, you're not going to believe
that.
Yeah.
You might think he's just a tall tale.
Yeah.
I think John's back with us now. Hello, John.
Wonder if we're having some issues, because I had trouble getting on as well.
a cutie man. I've unmuted him.
Well, we'll continue our discussion while we're waiting for John to get back. I mean, it's very intriguing, and I think with all these shows that we do, we find more questions than we ever do answers. And I'm going to put something else out there that was really, really bizarre. And, I mean, I can't say that it was Abraham Lincoln. But what I will say is John and I had a conversation on the phone about this today, and we were discussing, you know, what you know, could happen. And we were discussing the whole possible body double thing. And in the middle of this, I heard this voice in my head, and it was a very stern, and it was deep, but it was a very forceful but stern voice. And it said a couple of times that the truth can never come out. And I was trying to figure out who it was, and I could never, ever get him to tell me who it was. And he said, you don't understand the severity. The truth cannot come out, ever. Like, you know, it can never come out. And then he was gone.
Yeah, and we discussed some things about that. But first of all, I want to get back to to the previous question about the kids. He told me that they called them and their parents in, put the absolute fear of God in them, and said, we will follow you, and if you tell, that's the end of you or your parents. So they all signed up for this. They were all interested in doing it. But it was, once you become an attorney and all this, I mean, that's one reason you can't find Andy Basiaga right now on the internet. All the links to his Facebook pages don't work. Nothing really works unless you have gone through this. And you're lucky enough to talk with him 7 or 8 years ago, like I was. He is history. He's absolute history. And I'm going to have a buddy of mine who lives in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm going to have him go try to find him at his law office, because I do have an old address. I want to find that guy. I want to talk, unless he is not able to talk. And that's all. That's all I can say. It's an amazing thing. He seems to have kind of vanished since 2011, and that is about. I talked to him probably in 2012, and I think he just kind of vanished. So we've got kind of a conundrum here. We've got an interesting story. We've got a tale of one of the most famous people that ever lived, and it seems to be somebody wanted to know who Scott Lang was. I talked to some friends of mine that were in and around on the internet, and I asked to pose that question, who really Scott Lang was, and they said, John Wilkes Booth, not necessarily. And so, if I may, I want to digress to another topic that Andy Basiaga covered with me, and it relates directly to what we're talking about here. He said that the different people who shot Lincoln were in different time frames than, you know, like John Wilkes Booth was always in the same time frame. Mary Todd Lincoln was in a different time frame. The other actors, bad actors, as we call them today, they were in another different time frame. Now, what is the time frame? Here's Andy explained it to me. He said these things tend to overlap and they get tangled. So here's an example he pulled on me. He said when he was at San Diego State University as an undergraduate, there were four of them, totally lived together in a suite. They did that for 4 years. They were best friends. So about 20 years later, he was trying to contact the other three so they could get together and have a reunion. He said that he could contact two of them, but the other one seemed to have vanished. So they, all three separately, called the alumni office, and they had no record of this fourth fellow that lived with them. And they all had the same name, and they knew him, and they knew all about him. And they were all very concerned. The guy just seemed to have vanished from the face of the earth. So Andy started looking through the internet, because the fellow was, ended up being a medical doctor. And I don't know if y'all realize this or not, medical doctors are the most well-documented people on the planet to their careers through their entire lives. I checked out some the MDs that I went to school with, and I could find everything that they'd ever done, every position they'd ever had, all the way up until current when I was there. And then I had an idea. I said, well, see, first of all, Andy told me that he found this guy. He had graduated from medical school up in Northern California. He lived with his family, was teaching at some medical school, and didn't know how he got up there because he said that he attended UCLA for medical school. They all knew where everyone was. So he said, this is crazy. The guy's got a separate life than we know about. And they don't even show. They showed that he graduated at one of the colleges up in Northern California. That was crazy. So here's what I did. Now, this is where it gets really crazy. I went to Clemson University for my master's degree. And there was a buddy of mine. His name is Henry. And he was a mechanical engineering major, and then he went to Medical University of South Carolina. We all knew Henry. I was good friends with him. We probably partied a little bit together and had a great time back in the old fraternity days. So I looked up Henry. I couldn't find him anywhere on the Clemson alumni website. I called the International Office of my fraternity. They had no record of Henry. I mean, I was one of the ones that initiated the guy. It's like Henry had vanished. So I started searching his name in various states. It turns out that my buddy Henry was listed at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Now, that's Faith Institute Youth. He is listed as graduating from there with a bachelor's and master's in biochemistry, which he did not have. And it turns out that he was on the faculty of Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. But I looked at his resume, and it looked very strange. It looked very vague. It didn't have very much about him other than he graduated from USC. So I called my attorney that morning. So I told him the situation. He looked at Henry's bio at MUSC. He said, John, this doesn't look right at all. He said it looked like it was just thrown up. It's incomplete. So you can find doctors online. And if you have any doctors that you went to school with or were friends with, from a long time ago in college or high school, look them up and see where they are. Make sure that everything matches. Because when I did this with my boy Henry, and I can't say his last name, because lo and behold, I mean, I've actually visited him at MUSC. And he knew me, but he didn't remember from when. I mean, I can imagine the 3 years that I knew Henry, that he remembered me. But that was about all it was. He said he'd never been to Clemson. He'd gone to UAB. He'd been a Sig App. He hadn't been a Delta Chi. I thought that was very strange since I helped initiate it. So
that's crazy.
What Andy said was right, that people might can get shifted to another time stream. And that right there, absolute crux of the Mandela effect.
Yeah.
That you get shifted to another dimension. We call them, parallel universes, but Andy calls them time streams. So there, I just unloaded all the secret knowledge that I know about this whole thing. It's crazy. There's evidence that it's correct because when I went and checked, and my attorney, I had lunch with him. I always have lunch with him on New Year's Day weekend. He remembers. He said, yeah, John, I remember seeing it, and his resume didn't look right. Well, I went down and saw him. He remembered me, but couldn't remember when. So there you go. There's something to chew on for a bit.
Definitely.
Very interesting.
What happened? I don't know. But that's what we got. You know, who shot who? It's like who shot JR? It's like who shot Lincoln?
Who shot Lincoln?
Tell me about these time streams that Andy talked about. His book is unavailable. I'm going to try to find a copy of that book on Project Pegasus that he wrote. I'm sure I can find one somewhere. Robin, you may need to help with this one, okay? Hello.
Hello.
You there?
Yeah, we're all here.
Okay, it kind of just dropped everybody at one time. That was very odd.
No, things like that happen. I talked about Andy Basiaga.
What do you think, John, about why do they send children back? Why did they?
It was because of their size and the stress on the body. They tried to send some adults back, and they came back with problems, especially Andy's father, who he actually saw in one of his trips. He said his father didn't know him because his father had gone back a couple of years before he was born. His father didn't recognize him, but he recognized his father.
But even that's weird, because if you look, there has been a lot, especially in the last couple of years, there has been a lot of different cases of time traveling. And it's all adults. So what is it about that particular project that, I mean, and obviously, you know, that's what they're claiming was the reason they used the children. But why is it all these other time traveling in that time period, in our current time period, but in that particular case, they had to use the kids. That was the only one that was going to work. What was so different about that?
It was smaller and it was less stress on their bodies. Because as you get older,
right, but what I'm saying is there's, I mean, and they have, this guy has been out on the internet on and off for years, where he's come back from the future to warn us of all kinds of things. And there's hoaxers out there. I'm not saying there isn't. But there has been an awful lot of cases of time travel. There has been photographs that were taken hundreds of years ago of somebody that's living right now here. You know, they've had a lot of examples of time traveling, and every single one of them is an adult. But in this particular case, they couldn't use an adult. They had to use a child. And I guess my point is, why in all these other cases, some that were done around that same time period, why could they use an adult for that? But in this case, they couldn't, because it wouldn't work. So what was different about this one?
Well, you got to remember, we're talking about technology that's probably 30 years old now. They probably improved. And there might have been problems back then that we don't have now. I don't know. That's the only bit of an educated guess that I could give. As I said, I want to find out more about this. I don't know if I'm going to be allowed to find out more about this. I don't know. But we'll try. So, you know, this leads to another question. If my idea of the body double, and I believe the body double was in effect with Anna, Nicole, and Daniel, I mean, what? You know, who knows how many body doubles have been used and have been, unfortunately, murdered or kidnapped. So what in the heck is, what is Sean in Dodge? What's that in Dodge? I used to say it out in the wild, wild west. What's that? I mean, I think this is one of the most interesting stories I know. I tested my theory out, and I found a bunch from students in the medical field, and my attorney, he remembers it, and he thought it was so odd. I checked his Henry's resume every once in a while. It's all filled up. It's all complete. But it was not complete way back then. And it, and Tom said, this is so weird. I said, I know. But anyway, there you have it. Case of who really shot Lincoln. We may never know.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It may have been one of those 15 percenters that we don't know. Now, I can say that Charles Booth was in cahoots with two other folks. They were each going to kill somebody that day. And we don't know. All right, I'm going to get weird on you. We don't know if John Wilkes Booth didn't shoot that gun up and somebody else shot him from side the balcony. We don't know anything that happened. They did kick Mary Todd out. They said, say goodbye to your husband. And they took her out of the room, and she cried profusely. I mean, that's the story. But again, we don't know. We don't know if that's true or not. It happened, 170 years ago? 165 years ago? We don't know. But it's honestly the most interesting murder mystery that I can imagine. So I tell you what, we're a little bit late to get to it, but folks, can we give Tony a little bit of time, but time, Tony, to open that door to the cell block.
Absolutely.
Tonight.
Yeah. Well, tonight I have an unusual murder, double murder, actually, of a young man that killed both his mother and father. And I guess I will bet you guys will never guess where this murder took place at. Harlan County.
Of course.
What I told you today, John? As long as I live in Harlan County, I'll never run out of murders to talk about.
I'm telling
you,
what, we could go on those for the next year.
But this happened in 1997. And I'll read a little excerpt from the paper. But before I do that, I'll give you just a little bit of background. This young man was intelligent. He had a mental illness, paranoid schizophrenia, and as he got older, it got worse. He imagined that the television and the radio were telling him that his parents were pod people. What was the name of the 50s thing? Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He thought that they weren't really his mother and father, but they had been replaced by pod people who intended to hurt him. So he took a shotgun and he shot his I don't know who shot first, his mother or his father, but he killed both parents. And then he took them, they lived close to the river, and he took them to the riverbank, and he burnt their bodies with kerosene and car tires.
Oh, wow.
After he burnt the bodies, he took rocks, and he pulverized their skeletons as best he could.
Oh my gosh!
And then he threw their ashes and bone fragments into the river. He obviously was judged incompetent to stand trial. He was treated at a facility for about 5 years, and then was declared competent. He was given 20 years. He served about 10, and he's actually out on parole walking the streets very close to where I live today.
Great.
Now, yes. Now, there has been, I knew his, or still know his uncle. His uncle spoke to me about this probably about 3 years ago. The kid definitely, you know, they had tried to get him help, but he was hearing voices. There was rumors about satanic worship. You know, nobody's proven that or disproved that. But it was one of the most heinous crimes in years and years and years in Harlan County, and it's seen its fair share of them. But what possesses? Do you think do you guys think he was possessed, or was he just crazy? What kind of person shoots their mother and father with a shotgun? Drags, put
I don't think
their body
playing with the full deck.
And then and loads them into a vehicle, takes them and burns them, and pulverizes their bones.
I keep getting that he was crazy, that he kept hearing voices that were not from anything good. You know, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean he's crazy, but it means he was getting voices.
That's what he told in his trial, that the TV and the radio were talking. Yes. He told that in his trial, that the TV and radio were telling him they were pod people and they were going to kill him, and he needed to kill his parents, that they weren't really his parents. And
he didn't kill them because he thought they were his parents at all. Like, it wasn't a hate crime against his parents. Absolutely not.
He thought they had hurt his parents and had taken their place, and that's the reason for the viciousness, I think, of the crime.
Yeah.
But that took, you know, like I said, that took place in 1997. He's out on parole today. But there's a lot of speculation about, you know, other than him just really hearing the voices, really believing the voices, there was no motivation. They were really good to him. They gave him anything that he wanted. He had a really good life. And then one day he just snaps.
Yeah, I don't even, you know, I mean, that's, something was messing with him. And it was definitely something dark.
Well, I mean, for the voices to be coming out from what he says and from what his uncle said that he was hearing voices at an early age and they chose not to deal with it. He says the child gave off warning signs for years, hearing voices and talking to folks that weren't there and things like that. So, you know, maybe, you know, he was influenced. Maybe he was just stone cold crazy.
Well, and, you know, it's sad because, and I'm sure this happens all the time, you know, regardless of what year it is or what time frame it is, but you get people that they're hearing stuff and it's something negative that's trying to make them crazy and nobody believes them. They just write it off. You know, how many patients that are in mental institutions are actually mentally incapacitated, or are they being harassed by something?
Yes, trouble.
Well, Robin, you know, I'm going to comment about that. Our current medical science doesn't know how to take care of that. They don't understand the spiritual nature of medicine. I mean, I can tell everybody this. When I was at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, a psychic that I have a tremendous amount of respect for noted that I had some kind of a dark entity on my back because I'd been having pain for like 3 months. And so we went outside in one of the parking lots. She said she got rid of it. I haven't had any pain since. And I mean,
yeah, it's real.
And I said, you know, and this is one of the she-squatchers, Tammy. I mean, I've known her for years, and she said, "John, something's wrong with you." I said, "Well, I kind of know, but I don't want to mention it because I mean, I don't want to go to the doctor." But you know, medical science needs to realize that these are very legitimate problems, and just because you can't, the whole issue is that they're so hell bent on the scientific method, you may not be able to recreate this. But it's certainly real, and you can certainly have people that have a talent to help get rid of this stuff. I mean, this guy, this kid, what he was, if he'd gone to the right spiritual counselor, he could have been free of this. This would have never happened. Am I correct, Robin?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the other thing is, you know, you made a good point about, you know, people in there hearing these voices and, you know, like when Tammy picked that off of you, you know, this happens more than people think. And one way you can do it is to read the energies, okay, which anybody can do it. If I can do it, anybody can do it. But, you know, like a perfect example is, you know, and John, and you know this about me, I work with a lot of people that will call me for help in different areas. And I always, you know, do my best to do what I can for them. I don't know it all. I don't claim to, but I do what I can for them. And I had somebody new that had contacted me from out of the country the other day. Lovely, lovely person. Really seems to know what's going on around him in a very clear mind. and we were talking about this, you know, in the mind speak, and about, you know, hearing these different voices and trying to feel for them and not just, you know, listen for them. And as we were talking, we got to talking about the dream state. And this is a similar situation to what we're talking about. What people don't realize is what happens when you have something talking to you. And I'm not talking about a person that's mentally unstable or mentally ill. I'm talking about having an entity or a being talking to you. Okay? That and what goes on in dream state, and I'm not talking about when you're dreaming about, you know, Pebbles and Bam Bam and Flintstones. I'm talking about certain things that can happen during dream state. These things are just as real as what goes on when you are fully awake and walking around. Okay? These voices talking to you are absolutely, absolutely real. And people don't realize that, and then they start doubting themselves and they're doubting their mental capacities. And it all falls into the same thing. You know, yes, there are people that are mentally ill that do hear voices due to mental illness. And I'm not saying that that's what everybody has. But I am saying that there are secluded cases where these are beings that are talking to him. And I think in what Tony was talking about, I think that's absolutely what was going on there. But the things that go on when that happens and these things that go on in dream state when somebody invades your dream space are real. You can get hurt in them. You can get killed in them. I've woken up bruised from head to toe, busted lips. I even had a fracture in my arm one time that was done to me in dream state.
I've woken up with scratches. So, I mean,
oh, absolutely.
And so, you know, they are real. And it's just that traditional, and I'm not getting down on them because I know some great doctors, but traditional Western medicine technology does not acknowledge this like traditional Eastern medicine does.
No, they don't. And you're hard-pressed to find a therapist that will. Now, some will. When I divorced my husband before I married my current husband, he was very, to put it mildly, aggressive, I guess, because of the divorce, and was bound to term, and I was going to, you know, pay for it. So he actually had called CPS and said that I was mentally unstable because of all the activity with the Bigfoot, even though he lived there, he saw it all, he knew what was going on. This was just a way to get to me. And they came out and they said, you know, we can't tell you, you can't talk to your children about this any more than we can tell you what religion they have, you know, but now is this going to bother your children? And I said, let's just cut to the chase. Examine me. Let me prove to you that, you know, he's wrong. He's doing this out of vengefulness, and I'm not crazy. And I did. I went through a complete self-exam, and they're like, you're just the same as we can, you know, say you are. There's nothing wrong with you. You just live a very extraordinary life, and by the time we got done, they believed me.
Well, they should have.
And they're like, well, yeah. You know, of course, the pictures always help anyway, but – and. You know, they examined the kids, and they said, you know what, the kids live in a very extraordinary life, but they're 100% fine with it. But it's the same thing. You know, you get these people that have these things talk to them, or they have a vision. These are all paranormal abilities that we have been taught in our society do not exist. And the truth of the matter is they do. You know, it's hard-pressed to find some type of scientist that will do the appropriate testing to be able to prove it, because a lot of it you can't prove, but it doesn't make it any less real. You know, I don't see air floating around either, but it doesn't mean it's not there because we breathe it every day.
Yeah, I was persecuted in my last professorial position. I was told that if I brought someone that was going to talk about ESP, that I would be fired. Now, if I knew then what I know now, I would have owned the entire. And, you know, that's just, I mean, people are so closed-minded because they love living in a little box where they know everything that's going on. And when you kind of end up being pressed to be around these things, like Tony, go do your paranormal investigations, you see things, Robin, you do, I do. It's like, when we see these things, like, my goodness, you know, they're for real. It's like, I don't know what to say. I got a story to tell y'all. Can I tell you a story? And I think people will enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Tony, can I tell you a story?
I love stories.
We all know that I love Comic-Cons and festivals and events. And there's a venue in the mountains of North Georgia. Everybody's been saying, John, you need to talk to these folks. You need to talk to these folks. You need to talk to these folks. Okay. So I couldn't find out who's talking. And they seem to be open except when they're open for events. And then they're so busy I can't talk. So, and you know, it's fun. I think Facebook does kind of a good job of being psychic buddy. So, you know, and Facebook always has this, you know, people, you know, friends and whatever. And so I'm always looking around for people that are interested in the paranormal or that are interested in wrestling or, you know, because that's how early on I developed my fan base for my Comic-Con. So there was some fella looked like he was interested in events. So I sent him a friend request. And I said, hey, what's up? I said, well, you know, I'm John, and I run some Comic-Cons, and I run Georgia Bigfoot Festival. Oh, my goodness, I have friends go there. He said, I'm interested in helping with events. And so I immediately said, all right, I need to know your name. I need to know how to track you down because I need volunteers. Oh, we chatted through Facebook Messenger. Turns out he's the owner of that venue that everyone said I needed to get in touch with. Now, who was it that said, if you're in tune with the universe, all you do is live in a world of coincidences? You're correct.
Hmm.
And that was, and I'm trying to remember it, that was Edgar Casey. Sorry, Edgar, I apologize. That was Edgar Casey. We live, if, you know, if you're in tune, you live in a world of coincidences. That's just the way it is. And so it was wonderful. I mean, that was not a coincidence. How could I have met this person? How could they have known that I was okay to call through and talk? So, I mean, a lot of people are weirded out about that. I mean, I don't care if you know what. I can always hang up and ignore. I can do that easily. But this was great. And so got somebody, and we're going to be talking about doing some events. Robin and Tony and Janice Carter, I'll be talking to you about showing up. And we'll have a lot of this. They want to do a paranormal Comic-Con. Well, you hit the nail on the head. So there you go. And it is a wonderful coincidence, but not necessarily a coincidence. But anyway, I mean, I think we live in that world. And God love them. You know, the vast majority of doctors try to help you, but they just can't get over this. Now, I have one. A very good friend. I can't mention that doctor's name, female or male, we don't know, but they talk to me about this all the time. Because as they said, if anyone ever heard me talking about this, I would never have a paper. We talk about it all the time. We share stories about what folks would call paranormal. And it's like, I don't know, you know, there are certain doctors that believe in it. They believe in voodoo. They've seen it kill people who are perfectly healthy in the hospital. And, you know, it's like, what can you do? They said they've seen it, and I believe it. So we do live in an interesting world. And we live in a very interesting world here with the somewhat missing, but I think still around, Andy Blasiago. He's still a member of the Washington State Bar Association. So I know he's alive. And I want to find him. I don't know if he can come on or not, but I'd love for us to.
Wouldn't that be wonderful, though, if he could? Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if we can, but we'll try to find him. And, you know, here we are. This is not the kind of stuff we're supposed to talk about on podcasts for all the world to hear. But, you know, we talk about it anyway. Don't we, Robin?
Yep, you got it.
Tony, don't we talk about it all the time? We shouldn't be
about
this.
Yeah. People need to be educated, John.
Well, I think it's fun. This is what Murder 1-2-3 is about.
Absolutely.
I'll tell everybody. We've got a couple more names of people, of conspiracy theory folks that there's some weirdness going on about, and I told Tony to write those names down. I was driving. I was a good citizen. I didn't write them down while I was driving. But he's going to get up to me and give me those names. He's going to prepare the dossiers and stories and shows about them. So we've got a lot of fun. I mean, we got a lot of fun things going on here. So anyway, let's go with our final comment on who shot Lincoln, who really shot Lincoln. I'm going to go with Tony first, then I'm going to go with Robin, and then I'll close this down after another fantastic show. I've loved it. Tony Fuller, paranormal investigator at large, what are your comments?
I think what the children probably experienced was whenever they sent them back, they were seeing alternate endings or alternate parallel universes where that history was just a little bit different. You know, I don't think they went back to the exact point or the exact dimension every time because the endings change. I think if they went back to the same time, that the ending would have been the same, like whenever you have a residual hauling, you know, it's just like a tape. It just plays over and over and over. So I think that they went to that it's very interesting, and that they somehow got to witness different possible realities to that day in history.
Okay, Robin McCray.
All right, well, I'm going to jump on the Tony bandwagon because I have to agree with him on a lot of it. The only twist to that with the kids is, you know, the more I think about this, the more I think that they deliberately sent them to different times because they wanted different endings. You know, and like I said, with the premonitions, you have that premonition, but if something changes in that timeline, it will change the premonitions. And I would almost say, and I'm going out on a limb here, that they purposely sent these kids to the different timelines, and then it was those timelines were manipulated for different endings just to see what these kids would bring back. And then I'm going to jump back on that bandwagon, and I think that Mrs. Lincoln and Mr. Booth were in this thing together because it really, to me, is the only thing that makes sense. And there's so many questions to this and not enough answers. And you've got to look to the two people that not only was their motive, but opportunity. And Abraham Lincoln's wife had all the motive and all the opportunity, except she couldn't be the one to be pulling the trigger. And then if, you know, per se, the handlers for the president got wind of it, they would have put in a body double. And I think that ties in everything.
There were not handlers back then in 1856. I'm sorry.
No, but whoever was in charge or whoever worked with them or was in charge of anything over there, whatever you want to call them, somebody could have switched it. He could have switched it. If he thought his wife was going to do this to him, he could have put in a body double himself.
You know, he could have passed away with a quiet life in 1884 after living on a nice farm in Illinois. I mean, who knows? Who knows? He may have been the first recipient of the Witness Protection Program. We don't know, but it's interesting, and it brings up a lot of questions. And as usual, we end up with more questions than answers on this show, and I think that's what makes it fun.
We make people think, and that's what it's all about.
Well, it is. So all I got to say is I got some of the most – now, Devin had to take off to go be a musician. We were glad, really glad to have him here. He's always great, a lot of fun. He'll be back with us again, as you two will. I am going to say two things. First of all, Tony, I'm going to switch it back to you. The Cryptid Crew is a sponsor of this show. Do a plug.
Yes. Well, check us out on Amazon Prime. We have several episodes there, and we do everything from paranormal to mystery to obviously cryptids. We have some upcoming films in 2020. The legend, Bigfoot, the Legend is Real, is going to be an absolute blockbuster. We have got some really great evidence and really great interviews, and it'll be out in mid-2020. So check us out on Facebook, check us out on Prime, and go to the sites and give us a like, and check us out on www.cryptocrew.com.
Exactly. And let's not forget, they've got amazing people with Crypto Crew. I mean, you're talking about, you got Doreen Fisher there, who is near and dear to my heart, Thomas Markham.
Absolutely.
I mean, just everybody over there, that whole group is just amazing. Absolutely amazing. Definitely worth taking a look at and paying attention. They do their homework on the information they put out. They're just really awesome.
Even me.
Thomas and I talk all the time about wishing Doreen lived a little closer. Well, I would love to investigate with Doreen.
Oh, she's the best. I just, you know what? I have so much respect for her. I don't talk to her a lot, admittedly, but when I do, she's just a breath of fresh air. I mean, she's got an awful lot of integrity. She's got her head on straight. I couldn't tell you enough good things about her. I mean, really, she's just a really special gal.
Well, now,
super intelligent, super professional.
I have got an idea. We ought to get the Crypto Crew and the Murder 123 bunch, and we all ought to get together with our equipment and go investigate something.
Oh,
how
that would
that
be
sound?
Awesome. That sounds incredible.
And get Doreen and Thomas and you and me and Robin, if Devin can make it over here. And I mean, this would be a blast. Maybe we could go do it in Johnson City, Tennessee. Because, as you guys know, I have a place in Johnson City. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, it's great. So, look, I want to say thank you to both of you. I also want to say thanks to our new friends, the Cryptid Campfire Podcast. Our buddy, one of the hosts, Eli Watson, he said he and his friends were going to be listening tonight. They got some scary darn stories. I love those guys. I'm going to be listening to their podcasts every week. So this is Dr. John. This is Tony Pelosi. This is Robin McRae. This is Devin Tate. We are Murder 123. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Tony, for running the board tonight. Thanks, Robin, for being here. Thanks, Devin, for being here. And we'll see you next week with another fantastic Yeah. Murder
take
1,
care,
2, 3.
Everybody.
See you next
All
week.
Right. Take care.
Bye.
Great show, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Click the pink button, Tony.